At the ARC Encounter, we see presentations on the technology of the ancient world. I've had the joy of being a guest at the Creation Museum. Ken Ham invited me on a number of occasions to come. I've been given personal guided tour by the founder of Answers in Genesis Ministry with their VIP card, being able to go all around on several days through the Creation Museum and the ARC Encounter. And the Creation Museum is a world-class exhibit. This is phenomenal. I've been to a lot of museums. I'm a connoisseur of museums, and I must say this is one of the finest museums in the world anywhere. I'm convinced that you can learn more by spending a day exploring the ARC Encounter or the Creation Museum than you can in a month or even a year in many science classrooms in our average schools today. And they've got all kinds of extraordinary creatures, the Velociraptors and the Tyrannosaurus rexes and many, and these often are moving and growling creatures made with real state-of-the-art animatronics. They've really put a lot of hard work and thought into the Creation Museum. This is, as they said, the crown jewels of the Creation Museum. It's an actual skull, not a replica, of a Tyrannosaurus rex. Well, the ARC Encounter also speaks to us about excellence in engineering. Ken Ham said to me, guests notice the complexity of the ARC's engineering and architecture. This gives us the opportunity to help them think about Noah and his brilliance in the correct way. You see, many people have adopted an evolutionary view of history, thinking that the ancient people were less intelligent, less advanced than we are today. However, as we show, ancient people are highly intelligent, and the ARC Encounter showcases the extraordinary talent and skills which Noah and his family would have invested into making the ark effective in protecting the people and animals that God had selected from the catastrophic judgment of the flood. The fact is, the ark worked. And for it to have worked, it had to be very well built. So what was the pre-flood potential? How could Noah build something so large and so sophisticated? And what kind of tools and equipment and engineering features would have been available for building the ark? And according to the evolutionary view, our ancestors were ape-like creatures living in caves using nothing more sophisticated than a rock. But the Bible reveals that man was created in the image of God, and from the very beginning, man was intelligent and capable of remarkable achievements. So Genesis states that people in the pre-flood world played musical instruments and worked with bronze and iron. We know that Noah was capable of building the ark. That's why we're here. If our ancestors had perished in the flood, there wouldn't be any human life on earth, would there? So what other technologies might they have developed? And as people filled the earth, certain innovations surely grew. Tools for farming and construction, along with roads and various means of transportation by land and water, were surely invented. And the longer lifespans people had before the flood would have enabled innovations and inventors to collaborate for decades, even centuries, to produce sophisticated technologies. Just take the Great Pyramid, which is amazing. We look at these massive engineering masterpieces, and by the way, the pyramids can be spotted from outer space. I mean, that's how big they are and how extraordinary they are. And how the pyramids were built, and the original pyramids were over 480 feet tall. And currently they from 480 down to 435 feet, they're sort of sinking a little bit. Well, an estimated 2,400,000 stones weighing an average of 2.5 tons make up the pyramid. And these were the tallest buildings in the world for over 3,000 years. And when you look at the areas, the base of the pyramid covers 13 acres and is within 15 millimeters of being perfectly flat. Just extraordinary. And the bases, all four bases, are approximately 755.9 feet long, varying by an average of just 2 inches. I mean, it's a perfect square. And you consider all the innovations that they have. And we don't know how they built the pyramid, and we don't think we could build the pyramids today with what we have and our technology that we know. And then you can start to think of these phenomenal ziggurats that they have in the middle, in the Middle East and Iraq, for example. And then there's Stonehenge, which is quite an engineering masterpiece, and it's quite extraordinary. One of the most recognizable landmarks in the world, Stonehenge, was constructed without the use of modern technology. The early settlers of England moved these huge rocks called megaliths into place, arranged them to align with the sunrise and summer solstice and sunset of the winter solstice. And this okay, I know some people have read Asterix and Obelix and think that these are the results of Obelix leading some men here, there, but it's got a different origin to that. And so the largest stones can measure up to 30 feet tall and weigh 25 tons. How did you move 25 tons? Okay, maybe Obelix was that strong, but there's got to be another solution that's more scientific. They were transported from a quarry 20 miles to the north. How did they move these 25-ton things all the way along? And then some blue stones came from 100 miles away, 4 tons. Researchers disagree about the purpose of Stonehenge, but it must be used to some sacred rites. And we can also see how navigation in the ancient world was very advanced. So the intelligence of humans is demonstrated through the understanding of the use of astronomical observations for timekeeping and for navigation at sea. The incredibly precise Mayan calendar is probably the best known of ancient devices, but many sites and artifacts dating back to the 2nd millennium BC have been discovered around the world that display our ancestors' ingenuity. They had a very sophisticated understanding of the galaxies, of the stars, and of the planets, and of how to find their way across the seas. You just take, for example, the Vikings, who were able to cross the Atlantic, not just to Iceland and to Greenland, but to Canada, to North America. 1,000 years ago, Leif Erikson, more than 1,000 years ago, landed in North America, in what today would be Canada, in these massive open boats, which could not have been very easy to cross the Atlantic Ocean. In fact, the Scandinavians went all over the place, and then navigations were extremely advanced, and we're talking about over 1,000 years ago. And they had a means of compass and a way of plotting and observing the stars, and the Vikings went all over the world. Now, how many people lived on Earth prior to the flood? Well, they work out that depending on whether they had 1.1% growth per year, 1.2% up to 1.4%, the population could have been anything from 147 million in the world to 19 billion people. There might have even been more people in the world before the flood than there are now. It's possible. And so they look at all of that too. Well, technology and intelligence do not necessarily compute. So many people assume that since ancient cultures lacked our technological achievements, they must have been intellectually inferior. But take the ability to build a computer or a smartphone. It doesn't make you more intelligent than Albert Einstein or Sir Isaac Newton, who are plainly far more intelligent. If I've been seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants, said Sir Isaac Newton. And here's one of the greatest scientists of all time. Let's not assume that our iPads and computers make us more intelligent than people of previous generations who invented a whole lot of things. Well, of course, you've got the evolutionists claiming that people descended from ape-like creatures, but there's no real evidence of this, and the so-called missing links have either been found to be fully ape or fully man or complete frauds like Nebraska Man and Piltdown Man. The Bible makes it clear God made man from the dust of the ground, woman was made from his rib, and there are no ape-like creatures in our ancestry, and we can't find any missing links or transitional forms wandering around half man, half ape, and so on. Although some people do act like it. But biologically, they're not. So the concept of prehistoric events, prehistoric animals, prehistoric people contradicts the biblical view. Prehistoric is a term we should not use, because prehistoric means prehistory. Before history. This refers to a time when man was either not around or incapable of keeping records. But man was made in day 6, and he's fully capable of keeping record events through oral and written testimonies, and passing on those details to future generations, and the Bible is evidence of that. So, the first 5 days couldn't even be considered prehistoric because God revealed the history of what he did on those days. So the concept of prehistoric does not make sense from a biblical point of view. We should not use the word prehistoric any more than we should use the word lucky. You know, we don't believe in luck. And by the way, do you know where the word luck comes from? Lakshmi, who's the goddess of fortune in the Hindu pantheon of gods. And so the British soldiers in India started, you know, just the way soldiers make jokes, and they'd say, good Lakshmi. And good Lakshmi evolved over one to good luck. It's basically using the name of a Hindu goddess of fortune. So luck is not a biblical concept. It's a pagan idol. And similarly, we don't believe in prehistoric either. So it's good to just, you know, or saying, you know, stop behaving like a Neanderthal. Well, Neanderthals never existed anyway. It's a complete fraud. But there was a lot of evil. It was sophisticated, but they had child sacrifice back then too. So many people assume that humanity's religious beliefs began with a form of animism or superstition and spiritism, which gave way to polytheism, belief in many gods, which ended up in monotheism, belief in all-powerful God. But the Bible explains, and historical studies have confirmed, the opposite is true. Man begins with a belief in one God, but his knowledge of the Creator is diminished in many cultures, give rise to false views of polytheism, animism, spiritism. So it's not been evolution, it's been devolution or degeneration. So try a science experiment. Leave the teenager's bedroom without parental intervention for a few weeks and see what happens. You know, it degenerates. It becomes a health hazard. It becomes a real problem. Leave the garden without any maintenance over months and see what happens. Or leave the country, the municipality, the government in the hands of criminals, and you can see what happens. It takes effort to maintain things. And so while evolution suggests things automatically get better and better and better, history and proof in the Bible and personal experience shows actually it's the opposite that happens. So instead of our religions evolving to monotheism, it started with monotheism and it's devolved or degenerated into polytheism, animism, and witchcraft. So an intelligent look at ancient man. The evolutionary story often portrays ancient man as, say, brute caveman. Brute can't even speak, just grunts. Okay. Yeah. But over the years, he evolved to being a hunter-gatherer. And during the agricultural revolution, they became farmers, raised flocks, and more advanced people built cities. Well, once again, the biblical account shows that the caveman, hunter, gatherer, farmer, city builder, they existed, but they all existed at the same time. Just like today, you can have a Bergie living like a caveman on the slopes of Table Mountain, but his father might have been an engineer. You know, you only need one generation to go from brain surgeons and engineers into cavemen hanging around on the beach smoking weed and being a stunt looper. You don't need the whole idea that things automatically evolve upwards. No, they're more likely automatically slope and descend downwards. And so, right from the beginning, people were making cities. So it's not the fact that they started in a cave and ended up with cities. Sometimes they start with cities and end up in a cave. And there's a lot of evidence of that. So, for example, Moody Science Institute puts out some excellent videos, and one of the documentaries is of how civilizations died. The ancient Incas and Aztecs used to do brain surgery. I mean, they've got corpses they found where literally sections of the brain were, a skull were taken out and then put back in. That there's no need to put it back in unless the person survived the surgery. And they could do incredibly complicated astronomical sums. They were very intricate in their engineering. They could do brain surgery. And now the descendants of the Aztecs living like savages. Absolutely just, you know, drug addicts on the streets. It's not, evolution is not seen in history. It's a great theory, but it doesn't work. What about the flat earth? The popular myth that ancient peoples believed the world was flat originated in the late 19th century, and these people sought to belittle Christians by making the Middle Ages church look ignorant and anti-science, believing in a flat earth. In fact, there's no evidence that any Christians ever believed in a flat earth. In the 3rd century BC, they calculated the circumference of the earth to within 1%. And the Bible includes passages that imply around earth. He hangeth the earth on in nothingness. He hangeth the earth in space. Book of Job, oldest book in the Bible. The popular myth that the world is flat is just not historically tenable, and nobody's really believed in a flat earth, even though there are flat earthers today, but I just wonder if this isn't just a scam to see how many people believe their nonsense. Now, just think, in the early part of the 20th century, my grandparents would have lived through a revolution that went from horse and buggies to the first planes, the first cars, the trains, to steam trains, to jets, to spacecraft, to landing on the moon. In a lifetime. In one generation. And that's just extraordinary. We've experienced rapid growth in technological achievements over the past century. But this doesn't mean we're smarter than our great-grandparents. The innovations we enjoy today were built on the shoulders of our predecessors. In fact, the greatest century of inventions was the 19th century. 19th century, at the beginning of the 1800s, you couldn't travel faster than a horse could run. That's the fastest speed a person could do. But in that one century, the 19th century, from the 1801 through to 1900, you went from horse and buggy to trains to helicopters to planes. You could literally go in one century the whole way, telegraph, undersea cables, communicating instantaneously between Europe and America, all sorts of things that could not have been imagined. And so technology, really, most things were invented in the 19th century. In the 20th century, we find those basic major innovations of the 19th century. So, from early man, men like Tubal-Cain worked with bronze and iron. But the flood buried the sources of metals. So as Noah's descendants populated Earth, metals need to be rediscovered, and technologies lost had to be reinvented. Man began to rebuild, but they soon faced another technological setback, the judgment at Babel. And as the very people group scattered from that place, scientific achievements and technological achievements came slowly, because now most people need to spend their time struggling to meet basic needs, food and shelter. And so, remember, in just 70 years, they were able to go from horse and buggy to man on the moon. Now, the Noah's Ark at the Ark Encounter theme park is the largest freestanding timber-framed structure in the world. 510 feet long, that's 155 meters long, 85 feet wide, 25.9 meters wide, 51 feet or 15.5 meters high, based on the biblical dimensions of 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, 30 cubits high, using the Hebrew long cubit of 20.4 inches or 51.8 centimeters. There's 3.1 million board feet of timber used for the ark structure, and that's not counting the wooden exhibits. Now, if you want to know, this is the opening day of the ark encounter, which was on the 7th of July, 2016. Why 7th of the 7th? We'll see in a moment. In board feet, the timber to build the ark here was 612 miles, or 985 kilometers, the distance between Cape Town to Kimberley or Cape Town to Bloemfontein, depending which road you're going to take. Now, who built the Ark Encounter? Amish craftsmen and carpenters were primarily responsible for the construction of the timber frame structure. I mean, who deals with wood more than anyone else in the world? The Amish. The Amish have decided to freeze their technological world at 19th century. They won't use electricity. They won't use cars and so on. They still use horses and buggies, and obviously they have to use woodwork. And so the Amish are famous for the whole community comes together with a new family, get married, and they will help build them a barn. In one day, they will raise a barn. I mean, nobody in the world can work better with wood than the Amish. And so the Amish were recruited. In fact, the man in charge was a man who's raised Amish. He said he was 15 years old before he first encountered anything like a chainsaw. He was working with saws and planes and hammers from time he was four. And the ark includes 290,000 board feet of bamboo flooring. That's about 88 kilometers. 67,000 holes were drilled in the heavy timber. And a total of 300,000 screws were used. This is a massive operation. 50,000 wood pegs, bolts, washers, and nuts. 95 tons of steel plate connections were used as well. It's an unprecedented achievement. The huge 66 lodge poles, each 55 feet or 16.7 meters tall, are Douglas fir and Edelman spruce harvested in Washington and Montana states. This is from inside the ark. Just an extraordinary vision. The ark is built on 102 piers, each 4.6 meters high. The ark's keel is 3.8 meters above the ground. The roof of the ark is 24 meters above the ground, and it has a fin that extends even higher. The fin helps for stabilizing. The ark's 132 exhibit bays house world-class exhibits, or at least 132 exhibits when I was there. Maybe they've got more since. Fascinating details on geology, history, technology, before the flood. So who was Noah? And what does the Bible say about him? We read that Noah walked with God. He was a righteous man, a preacher of righteousness, and he faithfully followed God's instructions. Now, it's common in children's books to depict Noah as somebody raising chickens and sheep and called to build an ark. But it's more likely he was a shipbuilder. And he was obviously a family man. And we read that he had Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Each were married. And with so few godly people to left on the planet, so he would have only had 8 human beings on the ark. 8. And we're all descended from them. And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Noah did everything that God had commanded. Noah was a righteous, obedient person. And so we have depictions of Noah and his wife. These are actually animatronics. They talk, they can even answer questions. Quite amazing exhibits. And for example, one was saying, you don't look 600 years old. And he says, well, I don't look any different from any other 600-year-old man I know. And, you know, my wife doesn't look a day under 400 and over 400, things like this. So there's all kinds of, you know, fun interactions with them. And so people may, they come there and say, did Noah and his family know how to read and write? Yes, they knew how to read and write. Yes, they would have had books and they would have had lots of scrolls, and so you can see the different types of writing technology they had available and the kinds of woodwork you could see. Now, a lot of this is symbolic of the gospel message of the tree of knowledge of good and evil and Adam and Eve and all of the different technologies coming through in the kind of ways they would have written, and the quills and the storage pots. The Dead Sea Scrolls are found in storage pots similar to this. And so, you know, the idea is that's probably how they stored lots of it. They wouldn't have had bookshelves in a conventional sense. But they might have had libraries stored like this. We know the library in Alexandria was constructed with these kind of honeycomb shelves that you could put your scrolls in, and it would naturally settle down into a V. Again, you can see a lot of the depiction of creation and fall and confusion and catastrophe depicted in the wall hangings. And they've got the different sons of Noah being depicted. Probably they each had a skill like woodwork, metalwork, agriculture as different specialities between them. They would have needed to specialize to have managed what they succeeded in doing in the ark. Here, the metalworking son at work. For example, he would have needed quite a lot of metalwork, a lot of woodwork, and knowledge of agriculture and dealing with animals. So the call comes. You shall make an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark. Cover it with pitch inside and out. Here's how you shall make it. The ark's length shall be 300 cubits, width 50 cubits, height 30 cubits. Make a window for the ark, finishing it to a cubit from above, and set the door in the ark's side. So there was a place for windows at the top that there would be lights coming in. Set the door in the ark side, build it with a lower second and third deck, so there would have been 3 levels. Behold, I'll bring flood waters on the earth to destroy all flesh under heaven, in which is the breath of life, everything on the earth shall die. So how could the ark have been built? Well, they would have had technology along these lines. Yes, they had the wheel. And, of course, they could have also had people carrying things on poles over more difficult terrain, primitive, simple wheelbarrows. And God equips his people to do his work. So how would Noah have acquired the skills? Well, he could have been a shipbuilder and learned over many decades from the different best in the business, and his sons may have been specialized between woodwork, metalwork, and agriculture so that they could have all the skills necessary to be able to build the ark, to construct it. How could the ark have survived in those tumultuous seas? Well, the technology used would have been layers, different layers of wood, and not using just metal spikes, but wooden plugs. Because when wood gets wet, it swells. And so, for example, if you start to have a leak in a boat, you hammer a wood plug in, because that wood plug will swell when it gets wet and stop the leak. And so by having multiple levels, if one fails, you've got a fail-safe, you've got different levels, and this is the technology of shipbuilding that would have gone way back. Some people made an observation 19th century that the ships that they built in 19th century couldn't have survived the trauma of the flood. And just point out, that's true. But we're not building ships as well in the 19th century as the Greeks and Phoenicians were building them 2,000 years ago. And we've found some of those ships, and you look at a lot of them and say, wow. It's just like today, we've lost a lot of the skills of the past. We can't make silk as well as silk was made many centuries ago. We can't make steel swords as well as was being made back in the Middle Ages. There's some technologies that we've lost, and we're not as proficient at it. So again and again, you can just see that just the fact we've got a lot of technology around us doesn't mean that we're smarter than previous generations. And previous generations specialized more in woodwork than we do today, and so on. But these would have been the types of woodwork that have been used in the hull in order to enable the ship to handle the stresses of the ark in a flood, a cataclysmic work. And there's a model of how the ark could easily have been built and how everything would have fit.